it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to the local arts. And now, here's...
Good morning, Sunday morning! Whether you're an art maker, an art faker, an art breaker, or an art partaker... Welcome all, because all are welcome, of course, to Homegrown, your show about local art. I'm the one that they call Clinton, and I'm here with the woman whose signature Michael Jackson song is You Wanna Be Artin' Something. Wanna be artin' something. Got to be artin' something. Wanna be artin'. Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Well, good morning, Clinton.
Good morning, Leslie.
How are you?
I am fine because you look fine this morning. You have this little, African-ish dress on. It's just like...
I know. And I wore my hair like wet today.
Taking it back to the motherland.
Taking
it back to the motherland.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to Africa. Yes.
There you go. Yes. Yes. And here I thought the motherland was the Netherlands. So it's nice to have that cleared up.
What? Oh, okay. Well, yeah,
the 80s
I'm glad.
The 80s were a rough time for me.
Okay.
I don't think all the synapses survived.
Oh, well, alrighty then.
We should go to our parental advisory every day. We try to start with a parental advisory. Sometime during this broadcast, we may say the word Zymergist. Zymergist. So, if you have kids and you want them to try to learn what a Zymergist is, you might want to take them out. You might want to take them out. Small 35 will do it. Maybe you've got a shotgun, something like that.
What?
You wrote
what
down take you? Them out. That's what I thought you meant.
I did not write that. You write this before the show. Take them out. Clinton?
What? How else is that supposed to be read?
Oh, my God.
Stand that. People, the kids. Anyway, we're going to go to our first guest. Our first guest is a local musician and Zymergist. Oh, there went. From Champion Brewing Company, Levi Duncan. What's up, Levi?
Not much. How you doing, Clinton?
I am well. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Sunday morning, upright and breathing. We're doing great.
Hey, yeah, that's what it is. That's what it's all about. I am upright. I am breathing. I'm walking and talking. So Levi, you started your beer career at home, right? You were
a home brewer. Yeah, I did.
So my first question is, what's the difference between being a home brewer and now doing it as your job? Is it just volume?
No, it's not just volume. It's a lot of technique difference, and it's a job now. So it's not just the Sunday morning, get up and make a beer fun thing. It's something that you're held responsible for. So it's a real job. The equipment that's used is very different, although the principles remain the same. So the principles of brewing don't necessarily change.
Right.
But the equipment certainly does.
So you were the head brewmaster at Champion, but you just got a promotion.
I was the lead brewer at Champion. The head brewer is Hunter Smith, the owner.
Okay.
And I got a promotion. I'm the director of operations for Champion now.
We got a big wig in here.
Damn! Yay!
So tell us about Champion Beer. Like, I mean, Clinton and I have both drunk it before, and we love it, but you know,
might have been seen at the pub a time or two.
Right?
Are you suggesting that I have consumed copious amounts of Champion beer in my time?
I am suggesting that because you know I think we've done that together once or twice.
I think we have.
So, basically, Champion Brewing is the brainchild of Hunter, and it's completely revolves around the vision he has for the company, which is very punk rock, very local. And we try to meld those things together. We make several different beers in the tap room. We have typically 12 different beers on tap, and then we have the Missile Factory that we make all of our packaged beer in, with a very talented, great team that we have working there.
Cool, cool. Yeah. So let me ask about that. So Hunter comes from a punk rock background. You're a musician. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that flavor that goes into at least the naming of the beers.
Yeah.
And if it's true that certain craft, and it is true that certain craft breweries have certain sort of niches or certain sort of things that they represent, like mm-hmm. New Belgium, bikers, sure. Long trail hikers.
Yeah.
You guys definitely seem to be music based.
Oh, yeah.
Why the name Champion? I'm surprised that the name didn't be like didn't so like Rockin' Beer or
that's a question best asked to Hunter. I didn't name the company, but I can say that Champion resembles what we're about. It's like think like a champion, drink like a champion. It's kind of our tagline.
All right. So here's the question, because we're a show about local art.
Yeah.
Is brewing an art form?
Absolutely. It's a medium of self-expression, just like any other art form. It's like music or cooking, I would say, is in the same vein of art, without a doubt. So you can express yourself in brewing by trying to attain a result. You want a beer to taste a certain way. You want to create a certain style of beer. Then you work tirelessly and test and retest and go through the process of finally getting to your final product that you want it, you know, the way you want it to be.
So what's the last beer that you did that with, that's an expression of your art?
Well, we kind of do it all together. That's the thing. We really did it together. Hunter is the recipe writer in chief, and he's the head brewer. So it comes from what he's wanting to do. And what we do is when we get a recipe, we execute it. So we go through and figure out how in the process it's going to, or what we have to do in the process to make what he wants to make. I was allowed to do the recipe for Violator Doppelbock recently, which was a lot of fun.
The Violator. Yeah,
I love Doppelbock. Yeah, so it's a big dark lager, and it's really great. I love Doppelbock. It's a great style. So when you do that, you kind of start with the style. You want to mimic a style, so you go with different ingredients and different brewing processes are used to make it, and you go from there and put it through your brewery with your process and your equipment and try to get the desired result at the end.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the Violator, at least for me, is Doppelbocks frequently can be, I don't know if bready is the term, but like they're big beers and they're kind of thick. The Violator, it's got all that taste, except it's really smooth on the mouthfeel. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, I would say so.
That's really like that's it's really different. It's also really nice.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing about Doppelbock as a style. So there's all these styles have got a big history behind them, and that particular style of bread is particular style of beer is referred to as liquid bread.
Right.
So it was a style that was developed for people in monasteries and stuff that were doing fasts, so what they could have during the day to stave off hunger. So they referred to it as liquid bread in the monasteries, and that kind of grew into this style we know today.
So when you're dealing with something like the Doppelbock or any of these other set styles, mm-hmm. What's the negotiation between a traditional take and sort of messing with it and adjusting it and maybe even just effing with it a little bit?
That's where self-expression comes from. So the American craft brewer is very much into experimentation. We all are. So it's not uncommon in our industry at all to see a style that's traditional and have someone put their own twist on it. So that's where you get these crazy cool beers, like a lot of the ones that we do at our tap room that's a style of beer, but it's got fruit juice or it's got real live fruit in it or hemp seeds or what have you that you want to put in there to make it your own. So these styles that are traditional, like a traditional IPA would be like Bass mm-hmm. from England, and that tastes very different than what you mm-hmm. would get in an American style IPA like Missile.
Right. Right, right. See, thinking of you guys as artists, thinking of what you're doing as an art form, you guys are one of the things that I think makes you unique. And let me see if you agree. Is that a lot of artists fight against the not familiar? I mean, that is to say, they put especially in the theater world, because we both do theater stuff. It's really hard to introduce stuff that people don't know.
It can be,
right?
Yeah, sure.
From a marketing point of view, much easier to say, hey, we're doing the Sound of Music. Everybody knows the Sound of Music.
I see.
There's a selling point to that. We're going to be doing this. A lot of our audience is trained and keyed to recognizing things that are familiar, and they know they're going to get a lot that's familiar. And I think other art forms get that as well. Mm-hmm. But you, for craft beer, it's, it's so different. I think that you guys have built this community, and in terms of your audience, built this thing where they have grown to expect that it's just going to be different every time, and they have to come with a really, really open mind.
Sure. So we strive for consistency with the product that goes into cans and kegs and whatnot that comes out of the missile factory. So that kind of get a can of missile, you want it to be consistent. You're right. There's variations in craft brewing everywhere. But for instance, the craft brewing customers that we deal with in our tap room, our people want something new every time they come in there. They're very promiscuous in that way. They'll come in and say, hey, what's new? You as a beer buyer know very well that your customers come in and say, hey, what's new? What's
Straight
going
up.
On? Right.
Yeah.
So I think that in our industry, that is part of our culture. And when you go to the grocery store and you're a beer guy, what do? You look on the shelf. Hey, what's new? What's not there?
Is that exciting? Still, is that ever? Do you ever feel the pressure for that? It's like, oh, geez, we got to come up with yet another new beer.
Not really. I mean, you know, there's always somebody that has an idea, and there's always certain ingredients that you've always been batting around the back of your head and go, gosh, man, what can we do with that? You know, like we've made this Malibu Nights that's going to be going on tap in the tap room pretty soon, and it's a IPA, but it's got hibiscus in it, so it's a big, beautiful red IPA.
Oh,
and that's
wow.
That's something that's cool. So you can take an ingredient that maybe isn't normally in beer and find a way to apply it in a neat way. It's really cool.
So you mentioned the tap room a couple of times.
Yeah.
You guys do a lot of stuff in the tap room that maybe people wouldn't be used to seeing in a pub. Like, you've got book clubs that meet there.
Yeah.
You've got
And I just flashed on something. Is going to drink the beer and visiting the tap room, as opposed to going to the store and buying the canned and distributed beer, like the difference between going and seeing a band playing live in concert and just purchasing the CD?
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
Come on, Levi.
What I'm saying is you go to the tap room, it is a complete experience. And there's beers there that are on tap that you cannot get anywhere else. They're not going to be at the grocery store.
Ah.
And that's the whole point. The tap room, we make beer that's just basically going to be served there. So that we got a crowler machine, so you can buy a crowler of a beer that's on tap there and take it home. But for the most part, that's the beauty of the pub is it's kind of of the tap room. It's a place where we can be experimental and put it out for people, and then the people come there for that reason.
Yeah.
And we do have the book club. We have a run club on Wednesdays, which is really, really cool.
So really?
People, yeah. They go. Our guy James goes, maps out courses for people to run. They keep track of it, and they come back and have a beer. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun.
So, and you guys have had a lot of music because you have the tap room inside, and then you have like a whole tented thing out back where you can do stuff. So you've you've had like musical acts.
Sure,
there.
We've had a few metal shows that we put on typically during Tom Tom, and then we had recently another show a couple weeks ago. That's more like the Americana type. It's not really a music venue per se. I mean, we don't have a lot of music acts, but sometimes we certainly do, and they're chosen very carefully and they're a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Well, you know, I mean, Clinton and I have both been to the tap room, and we both love the atmosphere. And of course, we have friends that work there, so it's hi, Sean. so you know, we get to go and hang out with our friends and have a beer, and it's really great. And I'm glad that Champion is here because you guys are adding a lot to the Charlottesville milieu.
Well, I'll tell you, I love it. I think Hunter did a great job just with everything from the top to the bottom. And we've assembled a really talented, really great team of people that make this happen. No one person can make beer happen.
Right.
It takes a team. So I'm proud to be on it.
Collaborative art form.
Yes.
It is, most certainly.
Thank you so much, Levi, and thank you for the presents that you brought. We like
no
presents.
No problem. Always got to bring a little with you. That's all right.
Thank you so much.
All right. 14 minutes past the hour, just about to roll over into 15 minutes past the hour. If you're just joining us, hey, how's it going? This is Homegrown, a show about local art, your show about local art. We've just finished talking to Levi Duncan from Champion Brewing Company about brewing beer, the brewing art. We've got our next guest coming right here from our friends at, oh, hit me, Four County Players. Oh, yeah. It's just...
You're in an interesting mood today, Clinton.
I just realized that I was in an interesting mood today.
Yeah,
he giggles. It makes me nervous.
I know, right? Yeah.
You know what I think it is? I think it's sort of lack of sleep high. I think that's exactly what it is.
Okay, well, then that's always me. So I guess that explains my weirdness. So who do we have here, Clinton?
We have here from representing Four County Players, local director and actor Robbie Crystal. What's up, Robbie?
Hi there, how's it going?
You brought with you one of your cast members from an upcoming production, that's with us, Jason Cooper. What's up, Brother Tree?
I'm good, Brother Tree. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you guys. So tell us about, why are you guys to tell us about this? Is Four County Players doing something right now?
We are doing an amazing production of Once on This Island.
Once on This Island!
Which you're very familiar with, I hear.
I am familiar. I've heard the soundtrack once or twice.
Once or twice, yep, absolutely. Still my favorite show.
Really?
Hands down.
Awesome, awesome. For people who don't know, give them just a brief little thing, like what is Once on This Island?
So it starts out with a storm in Haiti, and there's a little girl that screams, and the village comes together and tells her this love story, this fairy tale. And it's the whole village working together, and people become different characters and then go back to being peasants. And it's really love conquering everything.
I get to be a god.
You get to be a god?
I do. It's brief, but I milk it for all it's worth.
Well, and you know what? You should.
When
anybody gets the chance to be a god, they should definitely milk that. So other than your godlike persona, what are the other people that you play inside the story?
Well, everyone is a storyteller, like Rob said. And we take on these different personas to tell different sections of the show.
Okay.
So you'll go from a peasant worker to a deity to a grand dome, the uppity rich folk on the other side of the island.
Oh.
So we make these changes pretty seamlessly, I might add. It's really great, to pivot, make a left turn, change your shirt, and completely be somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, it takes tons of focus, but it's also extremely fun, and it's emotional. This show is emotional. It's always been emotional for me, and I think that's why I'm so attached to it.
So you knew about the show and loved it before Four County decided to do it?
Yes. The first time I heard this show was back in the early 90s, and then I found out that Live Arts was going to do a production of it.
Ooh.
So I auditioned for that, and that's where I met this fine gentleman across from me, Clinton. We've been pretty tight ever since, hence the term Brother Tree.
There you go.
So, He's a lovely individual, isn't he?
He is. He's a big cuddly bear.
I know. And I get to spend every Sunday morning with him. How lucky am I?
That is lucky.
Oh, stop.
So, Robbie, how is it directing this show that's has so many characters inside it and these actors who have to switch? Like, that's a lot of directorial work.
Yeah, and is this a show that you chose yourself, or is this a show that Four County approached you with?
This is not a show that I personally chose. I was familiar with it before I was given the opportunity, but I mean, I've known about it for about the last 5-6 years. It was my drama teacher's in high school's favorite show.
Oh.
It's a lot of people's favorite show.
A lot of people within theater, but a lot of people outside of theater don't know the show very much.
Yeah.
It's really interesting how people within the community, you know, within the theater community love this show, and it just hasn't gotten out because it's just been overshadowed by things like The Little Mermaid and the Disney takeover of Broadway.
Mm.
But no, this show, I mean, this is, I want to say, my 25th show that I'm directing in about 5 years of directing experience, and it just, I am a little OCD about how I move things around and how I want things to be.
Oh, look at the, there's a lot of head shaking over here.
And, and so I'm very precise. I'm very specific. And I just approach it with, let's have fun. Let's see what happens. And really just let these guys create the characters and give them as much help as I can. Like, we used some Uta Hagen philosophy in there.
Yeah, which is fantastic. Really fantastic.
And did lots of conversations, did lots of meetings, and just had a lot of fun. And the designers just really took my ideas and ran with them.
Yeah, I've seen the set.
Better.
Carrie did an amazing job on that set. Oh, my God. God.
Gosh, the pictures of the set.
Seriously.
Wait till you see it in person.
Yes.
We will see it in person. I have friends in the cast, so yes. I have to show up.
Yes, I mean, once you see what the light designer did with the set, it just makes everything look amazing.
Yeah, because the set is it's very brightly colored. There's lots of pinks and greens.
It is, and there are moments where it is very dark and disturbing at the same time.
Yeah. Oh,
Tom did a phenomenal lighting job at certain points in the show, and it just look. I have goosebumps.
Look at that! He does.
Really, just takes your breath away, and you got to stop for a minute and be like, "Oh, that's creepy. That's creepy."
Okay, so now I'm excited, Clinton.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm excited. We have to go.
Why is it that when you get excited, I end up having to go somewhere?
That's the way it works.
Is that what?
Have you just met me? Like, we have known each other for like 10 years. Like, you've met me, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have.
All right. This should not be a surprise to you.
So, why don't you do the full shout out? Give the full names of the set designer and the lighting designer.
Our set designer is the amazing Carrie Moran. And then our light designer is Tom Farrell. And it all gets brought together by some beautiful costumes done by Linda Zuby.
Oh, awesome. Oh, great.
Yeah.
So, Jason, you get to do one of the things that people in theater eventually get to do if they do it long enough, which is the double dip.
Right.
You're doing, this is your second time doing the same role.
Correct.
Achievement unlocked.
Ooh. Yeah.
So, talk to me. What's it like doing the double dip?
It's amazing. It is absolutely amazing. The first thing that made it amazing was when Ben's like, you know, we need to be off book by music by this date. And I was like, I don't even have a book. I'm all yours.
Done.
I'm all yours. But, you know,
cheater.
With different musicians and things, it's always different. And but this show being what it is it, this show is so... You know, it dented my soul the first time I heard it.
Straight
and,
up.
And then our cast was very small.
Yeah, it was.
And we were so close-knit.
We were tight.
Yeah. Ridiculousness ensued. I think I cried the last 40 minutes of the show, our last show.
I think so.
Like, completely. Just bawled. And I have moments of that already with this cast. You know, right before we get to go on, when the show starts, that first song is just so beautiful. I have goosebumps again. I just get so emotional. And I do have a couple hard times on stage. There are a couple times when I'm trying to be snippy. And I have to fight the smile. I'm grinning from ear to ear when I'm up there. And it's just really hard. Like, I know we're cursing him right now. I need to curse this dude. But my God, I'm having so much fun. And you know how I feel about the song. I'm so blessed to be able to sing.
Yeah.
It's an amazing song. And it lets you use your entire range from here to up here.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's one of those. It's fantastic.
Well, I can't wait, because years later, I remember you bringing it the first time, just bringing the house down.
And you know, I get to sing louder this time. It's a bigger venue.
Gosh darn!
It's a bigger venue. I really get to just...
Jason, Robbie, thank you guys so much
anytime.
For coming and seeing us and dropping the news about Once on This Island. Please give the where and the when for people to know.
Yeah, go online at 4cp.org. That's forcp.org. Get your tickets. Or you can call Ro at 540-832-5355. She will hook you up. Do it now. Do it fast.
Because those tickets are going to go.
Yeah.
Once on This Island, Four County Players. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for having us, man.
Thank you.
Thank you. Homegrown. Now you know. Let's talk about some other things you need to know about in town. Currently running until the end of summer, currently running until August 28th, American Shakespeare Center summer season is still going on. Twelfth Night and King Lear by Mr. Shakespeare and the modern musical Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. Also currently playing until July 30th, Your Good Man Charlie Brown at UVA's Ruth Kaplan Theater, part of the Heritage Summer Theater Festival. It's musical extravaganza right now. Because currently running at Live Arts until July 31st, it's the Live Arts Teen Theater Company's Nice Work If You Can Get It. We had the people here a couple weeks ago. Go to sevopodcast.com and hear our interview if you want to hear about it. Live Arts Teen Theater. Also currently running until August 7th, as we just talked about, Once on This Island at Four County Players. And running today, starting today and going until July 30th, South Pacific, Some Enchanted Evening by Ashlawn Opera at the Paramount Theater. Going from July 27th to August 7th at the Guerrilla Theater, It's a Midsummer Night's Dream. July 27th, open mic night at the Bridge PAI. They're looking for poets, writers, hip-hop artists, actors, singers, comics, dancers. All are welcome. Go to that mic. It's open. You be open, too. Also on July 27th, it's the LYAO Comedy Open Mic Night at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall, hosted by comic Chris Allen at 7 p.m. July 28th to August 3rd, Foxfire at Oak Grove Theater, Theater Under the Stars in Verona, Virginia. July 28th to August 6th, The Odd Couple at UVA as part of the Heritage Theater Festival. The Odd Couple, I think I've heard of that one before. July 29th, the Virginia Film Festival's Moonlight Movies hits you again at the Ifs Art Park with American Graffiti, George Lucas's big blockbuster film before the real blockbuster film. Free and open to the public. Space opens at 7 p.m. for picnics and such. Movie starts around 8:30 when the sun is going down. Bring blankets and chairs. August 1st to 5th, Sea Lanes Out, Traveling the Paths of Poetry by Jasmine V. Bailey at the Charlottesville Writer House. It's a week-long intensive session designed to deepen and broaden the skills of practicing writers. And here are some of the music that you can hit. Today, Austin Miller at the Garage on 1st Street between Market and Jefferson. Also, the 7th annual George Melvin tribute done by the Charlottesville Jazz Society, featuring seven artists raising money for the George Melvin Educational Fund. It's at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub from 3:30 to 10:30, Day of Jazz. How can it be any better? July 25th, Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Music School. July 26th, Tuesday, featuring the Beach Boys, Pet Sounds. Wouldn't it be nice if we were older? At the Garage on 1st Street between Market and Jefferson. July 28th, Lester Seal at Fellini's. Also the Rugged Arts Hip Hop Showcase at the Twisted Branch Tea Bazaar. July 29th, oh, it's so much metal, you won't be able to stand it. That's later on. No, July 29th, Shagwolf, Matt Carrari and the Ex-Friends, and Born Crooked at the Anteroom. Don't worry, the metal's coming. The metal is coming. July 29th also, Tim Riles at Dirty Nelly's, DJ Tulo at Tavern on the James, the Pollocks at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. July 30th, Davis Dunleavy and Friends at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Also, Robert Jospe Express at Fellini's and LG and Friends at the Whiskey Jar. And here's the metal! I told you the metal was coming! July 30th, Scorched Earth Metal Fest featuring Pig Mountain, Umbra, Death Crown, Dispelment, The Vomiting Dinosaurs, Left Cross, Tyrannus, and Beldam!
Oh, okay, that voice. Wow.
There you go. July 30th, also Lauren Hoffman and the Secret Storm with Breakers and Please Don't Tell at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. How are you going to decide what to see? I don't know. I can't help you with that. I can just make the problem more difficult. Every Sunday, it's Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, the singer-songwriter night at the local. Every Tuesday, the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. On Wednesdays, you got the open mic night at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. Bob Benetta at Cafe Katura. The Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And Jim Wave at Blue Moon Diner. Every Thursday, it's the Woolen Writers Revival, hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly. And every Thursday, of course, down at Miller's, it's the John Dearth Quintet, because every once in a while, you just gots to come down to Dearth. And those are only some of the wonderful artistic events available in our wonderful artistic town. If you're an artist, you've got an event, you want people to know about it, tell us. We will tell them. Please tell us. If you're an artist, yes, contact us from our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc. Or you can email us at our handy-dandy email address, homegrown947@gmail.com. If you go out to see any of this stuff, you want to talk about it, go to our Facebook page and put in a comment, say, I went to see this, I went to see Beldam, I went to see Once on This Island, I went to see the Secret Storm. Go tell people what you thought of it, because here at Homegrown, we don't believe in critics, but we do believe in audience. All right, our next guest is a wonderful, wonderful return guest, the Homegrown Show by Local Art. We have with us entrepreneur, artistic stager, promoter, and filmmaker, Ty Cooper. What's up, Ty?
Where the drums at? I need some type of something. But how you doing? Thanks for having me again.
So glad to have you back. Hey, how you doing these days? You've been busy.
Yeah, I've been real busy.
He's always busy.
Yeah, I'm always busy, but it's
if you
different.
People knew the Herculean effort it took to try to find a time when we can get together.
Yeah, it's been crazy though.
Cause he's on the road.
Yeah, but you're about to be on the road.
I am.
Yes, indeed. She's working it out.
Working it out. Harlem. See, anything Harlem, I'm 100% for. So you can just walk through Harlem. You can say, hey, you know what? I just passed Harlem on the bus. Whatever, if it's Harlem, I'm 100% for it. So since you're going to sell your books at the Harlem Book Fair, I'm all in.
All right.
I got to give you a check. I got to give you a small check.
Yes, please do.
Small check, though, because you raised a lot of money already.
Well, make sure I can get home, you know. Yeah.
All right. That's cool.
Please,
I got you.
Please make sure
small
she can get home.
Small check this week. Yeah.
I don't want to do this on my own.
I got you.
You're helping Clinton out, too.
Indeed.
I'm going to give you like 50, something like that.
You understand, Leslie gives class to this show. Without it, it's just bad.
Nah. I've heard the show many times, so it's a real well put together show.
Oh, thank you.
See, that's what you need to do in order to get asked back. I'm just letting you know.
You know what? I'm gonna tell you this. I listen to NPR.
Yeah.
So And when I listen to you all, I can listen to it because I don't feel the urge to flip back to NPR. So when I'm doing that, then that's when you know that you're on that level. You right there where I want you to be at, and it's for my listening enjoyment, and it's for my education, because this show educates, and that's what talk radio should be about.
There you go.
Well, and that's what we aim to do. Give you a little something that's exciting and a little something for your mind.
And isn't that the core of African American art? It seeks both to entertain and to educate.
Yep, that's what it's about. So, you know.
And what a wonderful segue into your project.
Whoa! Because... Oh yeah, was that me? Did I set that up that way? Was that me? No, but yeah. It's all about the education, man, on all levels.
So the documentary you're doing, America's Darkest Future. It's about early childhood education, right?
It's about the inaccessibility of early education in this country. And we do a lot of comparison between what we offer here, which is kind of, you know, unfortunately, the lack thereof.
Right.
And then what's offered in Nordic countries such as Sweden, Denmark, and so forth. And you know, it's just really some stark contrast, and it needs addressing.
So what made you decide to do this documentary on this subject?
A few. But one reason is that I'm getting older. And I know the young people, we need the young people to take care of us as we get older. And I don't want no buffoons.
Right. You know. So you looked at the young people, didn't you?
Yeah, I looked at the young people. Like, yeah, I looked around. Basically, I just looked around. It's no rocket science. I looked around, and I was like, you know what? Hold up. Something is wrong. All right, what is wrong? I'm not just here kicking up dust. And there's a lot of people who kick up dust, and when the dust settles, they're nowhere to be found. So, you know, when I see a problem, there has to be a solution to it. So I try to seek that solution. And in the field of education, I'm not an educator by trade, but I'm a concerned citizen. You know what I'm saying? And I look at our communities, and I see the haves and have-nots. And you know, the basic form of education in the earlier stages is the most important, you know, from zero, from the womb to the, you know, to the kindergarten, you know, through the developmental stage and so forth. And
oh, so you're talking about early education.
Yeah. Pre-K.
Right at the beginning.
Pre-K. Instead of me doing a buck at a high school dropout, you know, some money at high school dropouts to try to, like, you know, finance those programs, that's a reactive state of mind. But you should be proactive. So let's put the money up front in the beginning. That way we could save our money and we could kill the jail system.
See, now that's very interesting because I will be honest with you. When I think of education, a lot of times in my mind, I start at first grade. Like, I don't think about kindergarten and pre-kindergarten and the importance of that education. So you're educating me. That's something new, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's hugely important. You know, 0 to 3 are the crucial stages of the developmental stages of a child. They learn how to crawl. They learn how to roll over. They learn shapes and colors, and they learn language. And, you know, all these things happen at that point. That's why you should mm-hmm. sing to your child when it's in your belly. You should, you know, talk and just let the baby hear mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. feel the tones of your humming and, you know, things of that nature.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I did that with both of my kids, and I continued.
Well, we see how they've turned out.
Yeah.
No, and I continued to do it, you know, once they were born. That's how I put them to sleep. I would sing them to sleep, both of them. And then as they got a little bit older, we would read every night before we went to bed. So, you know, both of my kids were doing chapter books before they even saw the inside of a classroom.
Oh, sounds yeah. exhausting. Sounds exhausting.
No, it really becomes fun because then you get to, like, re-experience all those books that you read when you were little. You know, like, I read my son Little Women. I read my daughter Tom Sawyer. You know, and you get to re-experience the stories through
their
eyes.
But I read them. one of them dies. The other gets married. Oh, Tom paints the fence. Spoiler: he and Becky get out of the cave. Done. I've already been there.
Do you see? I've already been there. Do you see what I put up with on a regular basis? Okay. No, it becomes fun and it becomes a ritual, and then you have kids who actually want to read.
That's true.
you know,
the thing about it, though, you know, there's so many different ways. For the documentary, as a matter of fact, I interviewed Robert Pianta, Dr. Robert Pianta from the mm-hmm. Curry School of Education at UVA. You know, he's pretty much the father of teacher assessment. And so he, you know, we had a great interview. I mean, I can't wait to. I want to leak the interviews. That's how good it was. You know, I want to leak. I have so many interviews so far, thus far, and I just want to leak them because they're so good. I have them on my computer. I'm waiting to edit it, but I'm trying to have self control. But
right.
Yeah. So he.
You could put out a little trailer, right? A little teaser.
Yeah. I am actually. So what I've been doing is, like, you know, I take the still photos of the interview and stuff like that. So I put them up there, and then I say a little bit about what he talked about or what these people talked about. And but he was a great interview. I interviewed Juan Diego Wade, who was the city school board member in Richmond. I interviewed this lady named Sheila Pleasance, who was the executive director of the Southside Child Development Center, which been around for 85 years and was forced to close their doors in June because of lack of funding. And that place was servicing 70 students, 70 pre-K schoolers.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue with the lack of funding is that the place had a waiting list of over 170 kids.
Damn.
So you have a waiting list over 170 kids. You have a pretty high grade of your quality of your facility. But the lack of funding, because they serve working families with reduced tuition,
right?
And so they were forced to close because, you know, they would not have closed if they served market rate,
right? A more provided, affluent,
yeah, oh,
yeah,
and then had a mix of the low income. But the fact is that they really served that community for 85 years, you know, so.
And it's just sad. It's a real problem because, you know, when my kids were little, I you try and figure out like when the right time to put them into a public school situation is, you know, because I was lucky enough that my grandmother was still alive, so she watched them when they were really, really little while I was at work. But then it's not only just a question of, am I putting them somewhere where they're going to get some sort of education? It's, I have to put them somewhere while I go to work. And the push and pull between that is sometimes really bad, especially because the cost of daycare, whether there's a school attached to it or not, is
goodness, yes,
is horrible. I mean, like it's literally a second rent.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons why the documentary was so important to me, because when I looked around, as you stated, eloquently stated, when I looked around and saw the issue, the reality is that if you make $18,000 or between $18,000 to $36,000, right, income, household income, mm-hmm. you pay up to 40% of your household income to child care for kids under 5 years old. Now, so imagine, mm-hmm. let's do the math. Let's use a nice even number, $20,000, right?
Right.
They pay up to, someone paying up to 40% of their income for child care. So let's say, that's $8,000, but let's say $7,000.
Okay.
$7,000. So the person had $13,000 left over. Now that's before taxes. Don't forget about taxes. So they got to pay their rent. If they have a vehicle, gas, food, clothing,
insurance.
Where the money at? There's not enough money to live. That's not enough money to do anything. So what happens? Sometimes you have a parent who they know simple mathematics. They're not lazy.
Right.
They're not lazy.
Right. Right.
Because they just like anyone else, they want to be able to balance family and work. So they what they do, they look at the math and then look at their next door neighbor who don't work and whose child goes to pre-K, whose child is in Head Start, who getting food stamps, who's doing hair on the side in the kitchen. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So they do the math and they say, you know what, I need to opt out of work. But they don't want to.
Right.
You know, everyone wants a sense of empowerment. You know, everyone right. wants their child to grow and be proud of them. You don't want your child to grow. You don't want to grow up, your child growing up, and they looking at you like, why are you not working? The American, America said that you should work. If you don't work, you're lazy. You understand? Like, you know, so no one wants that. So some people just put up with it, and what they do, instead of putting them in a pre-K program, a good program, they take them next door to the next door neighbor or grandma. Not saying grandma can't do it or the next door neighbor can't do it, but I've been in people's houses, and especially low-income homes, and seen kids with a Pepsi Cola and a Twinkie in front of cartoons
right.
in the middle of the day.
Right.
I've seen that.
And they do that because they have so many kids. Because, you know, I mean, when my daughter was younger and I was living in Northern Virginia, she was at a babysitter before she went to school. And this babysitter had 20 kids.
Mm. Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, I'm one woman, 20 kids. Mm. You know, what in the world is she going to do with them all day? You know?
And 20 little kids.
Yeah.
20 little kids.
And three of them were her own.
Yep, charging them, you know, charging people like, you know, very cheap. To watch the kids, but sometimes not even that cheap, but still kind of, you know, reasonably priced, because that's what that person can afford. They can't afford no more than that. So they put them into a situation which is not a learning conducive environment. So then the kids five, they get into elementary school. They can't compete with other kids. They make it left back. They have behavior issues.
I see.
Low self-esteem, yada, 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 yada. Then all the other problems happen throughout the rest of their life.
And right, if they are children of color, then they are already coming in with a stigma, and they are punished more harshly
absolutely.
For being behind.
So we know the phrase, you pay for what you get.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that, you can't pay, you don't get.
Yep.
Now, it sounds like your film is also looking at, am I right? It sounds like your film is also looking at an extension of that, is when enough people don't get, the rest of us pay for it later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about that.
Absolutely. You know, there's there are statistics out there, and they're always debatable. But let me just say this: there's no you don't have to be a wizard, you don't have to be the Wizard of Oz to understand the pipeline from school and lack thereof to the prison pipeline. You don't have to be a genius to understand that, you know, opportunities are there for the highly educated. You got more opportunities the more education you receive, because education is that the equalizer. All right, and then that's been proven. For instance, if a child is in school, and then they have a summer break. Let's say a child is is behind as far as attaining certain things in life, right? So they get into school. The haves and the have-nots, it begin to kind of, that gap begins to close a little bit, right? But then when they go home for summer break, mm-hmm. that gap widens again, back and forth. So school has been proven to be that equalizer. Because if you're in school, you can't compete. If you're learning, you can compete. It's just like, you know, any other person. Someone may come from a disadvantaged family or a household, but when they're in school, they can excel. It has been proven. That's how you may have someone who may not have had the best pre-K education, but they've been in these good school systems. Mom and dad may have, like, really helped them out at home and really, you know, had that learning conducive environment, maybe put them in programs and not have idle hands throughout the summer, then those kids have competed where they apply to Harvard, they get in Harvard. They apply to Stanford, they get in Stanford. You know, so education is that equalizing factor. But the problem is those who end up not competing, being able to compete, maybe because of, you know, they may not have had that learning conducive environment at home.
Right.
They may not have had that mentor, that program that was pushing them throughout the years. And many of them fall by the wayside. Those are ones that, you know, they end up in prison quite often.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of health issues, you know, because lack of education. Mm-hmm. It plays mm-hmm. a huge part in just in your life in general. So so we end up paying for it via taxes, via programs, via insurance. You know, just all the prison system, because a lot of our money goes to the prisons.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So right. We have to, that's why as a community, as a society, we have to really understand what should go first, what's most important. Set our priorities in a way where the kids, I don't care if you're a Republican, Democrat, the kids, we got to take care of the kids, and not just your own kids, but the kids in our next community.
Well, because those kids in that next community are going to be interacting with your kids when they grow up.
Like, yeah,
it's all connected.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is David Tewksbury, singer-songwriter from Charlottesville, Virginia, and you are listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
And if you're just tuning in, this is Homegrown, show about local art. We are here with Ty Cooper talking about his upcoming documentary, the documentary that he's working on now, America's Darkest Future. What is the status of the documentary right now? What shape is it in?
Yeah, we're in production. So we're like halfway through production. Bunch of interviews. Just came back from Tulsa, Oklahoma, to where I've interviewed the executive director of this organization called CAP Tulsa, which is they are doing it right out there. CAP Tulsa is known for having one of the highest rated programs for pre-K and fighting poverty, generational poverty, throughout the country. They have so many different services. They house 2,000 families, you know, as far as the pre-K, and their pre-K ranges from age 0 to 4 years old. That's what they're servicing in the centers. Because they have several different programs, but one of them is that they have this in-home visit program. Right, where the teacher who has a bachelor's degree, teachers go into someone's home and spend about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours with the family, with the kids.
Oh, to get to figure out how their home life meshes with their education.
And teaching them, yeah, because it's called parent teaching.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so they actually teach the parents how to provide the services. Because some, like in Oklahoma, there's a lot of Hispanic families.
Right.
Latino families. And sometimes, you know, some family may say, well, you know what, I don't really want to go, you know, I don't want my kid to go to the pre-K school. So they service 300 families by going for home visitations. Zero to 4 years old. So they really work with the parent and they work with the child when they're at that home visit.
So
they're teaching them at their home.
So how do they fund that? Is it funded through the
private donation state? Yeah, private
really?
State. Yeah. And the schooling is a Head Start programs. You know, so it's for the poor. Their agency, their organization is solely to fight poverty. Now, in this documentary, we also highlight kids who are not necessarily poor, because it's not just the kid that's poor that's fighting against the eight ball. You know what I'm saying? You have kids that's in middle-class families.
But still have no support
still,
at home,
yeah,
so they're not
yeah, so
getting
they still,
it. Yeah.
yeah, so they still. Sometimes you may have a family making 60 grand a year, household, 70 grand a year household income, but they have certain issues, drug abuse or things like that, which makes that their child disadvantaged. So it's not just money is definitely one of the key factors, but it's not just the money.
Right.
See, okay.
Yeah. And so Cap Tulsa, so I interviewed two families. I went to the family home and did an interview with them at home, but then also I followed them. I did an interview at home, but also I documented the interaction of the parent kids, so getting them ready, feeding them, getting them ready for their day. And then I followed them to school, and then when they dropped the kid off and so forth, then we had the sit-down interview with the parent. Then I interviewed the teacher and another parent when they picked the kids up from school. It was a Latino family, so we had the translator, Spanish-English translator. So, that program, Cap Tulsa, you should look it up, CapTulsa.org. Phenomenal program. And the guy, Stephen Dow, who used to work for Goldman Sachs, he was a Goldman Sachs investment banker guy. He's the executive director of Cap Tulsa. And New York, in 2014, New York called him back home and was like, look, how are you doing what you're doing out there? We need to know. And then that was 2 years ago. And now New York City has prekforall.org, which is they're trying to emulate what Cap Tulsa in Oklahoma is doing.
So funding brings up a question that we like to talk to artists about all the time. Not only how do you get paid for your art, but how do you get money to do your art in the first place?
Absolutely.
So how are you funding all of it? Because you're traveling all over the place. Like you're how are you doing this? How are you doing this?
Generous people. Generous people. I've been receiving a lot of support, and I was I don't know why I was surprised. I'm a pessimistic, cynical guy sometimes, And
no, you are not.
And I've financed all my projects for years, for 23 years, promoting concerts and shows. So I didn't really think people would, I know I had a great project. I had a great idea, but I still didn't really know. You still really don't know. And right. When you're independent,
right. Yeah.
When you're independent, you're so accustomed to paying for your own stuff. And I like mm-hmm. control. I'm a control freak when it comes down to my own stuff. When I write, no influences other than maybe if I'm writing a comedy, then it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I
love that show. I had that on while I was writing my plays for 24/7.
See,
I actually literally had that on.
See, that makes so much sense.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah, so
now you understand.
I've seen your plays for
24/7. Yeah. So it wasn't like It's Sunny in Philadelphia, but it was just
it gave you the tone.
The fast, like boom, 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 boom. Like, the dialogue, mm-hmm. One person messed up my play, but I'm not even going into that. I'm not going into that here.
So did you start a campaign to donate?
What I did, I'm going to tell y'all exactly what I did. Initially, I went online, like everyone doing, what is it? Kickstarter, right? So I looked at some of the other campaigns, and then it was like people who didn't make the what they were asking for. Mm-hmm. Then it was like a big mm-hmm. red stripe through it or something, like a big line, like loser type of
right.
thing. And I was like, oh no. If I'm asking for X, Y, Z, then I'm not going to be seen not making it. You know what I'm saying? So then I said, you know what? I said, the first thing I want to do is knock on my friend's door. You know, send some emails, make some phone calls to my, you know, people who I consider as friends, associates, people who I know has it, have it, and some people who I know probably don't have it, but I'm just asking them anyway. And I did that, man. I started, you know, calling everyone, said, hey, you know, I got this documentary, blah, blah, blah. I'm sending emails out. And my budget is, first and foremost, the film is a nonprofit. Right. Okay. So, I teamed up with, Virginia Organizing to be the nonprofit arm. So if you give money, it's 100% tax deductible. 100% tax deductible. So what I did is, I made the phone calls, and then, before you know it, man, people giving $1,000, $2,500, you know, a couple people gave $2,500, a few people gave $1,000, $500, $250, all the way down to $10, you know, and I take it all, $20, I don't care what it is. Mm-hmm. And so my budget is $31,000, and so far, I just picked up a $1,000 check today, got a $300 check dropped off the other day. I think I raised so far about almost $16,000. Out of the 31. So now I got 15,000 more to go. So my next step, I'm still going to knock on people's doors.
Right.
But I want to go to foundations now and do some grant writing and then try to just, because the fundraiser, man, is very difficult for me.
I know.
I could put together a sponsorship package and sell it to a company in a heartbeat. But this kind of thing is like, I got my hand out like, can you please give?
And like you said, for someone who's, and I'm with you, I'm so with you, for someone who has been independent, for someone who's used to relying on your own sweat and your own work, to be in that position, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's just, it's difficult.
It's hard. And that's why I was talking to my fiance the other day. I'm like, I'm so appreciative of the people who just, you know, people just giving, man. And, you know, and it's for the kids, you know, and I make sure people know, like, look, the money doesn't come to me. Your check goes to Virginia Organizing. I send them invoices for the bills and stuff. So, like, I just bought flights. I just bought a whole bunch of stuff. I just spent, like, out of my pocket $3,000 that I haven't even sent to them yet, you know, to try to get reimbursed and stuff like that. Because for me, man, it's about, man, just let's raise the money. Let's do the work. Like, I just want to do the work. Like, I'm not going to wait for anybody. I'm going to do the work. Yeah, you can go to americasdarkestfuture.com, americasdarkestfuture.com, and there's instructions on how to give. One thing, you know, you write your check out to Virginia Organizing, but it's very important, it's imperative that on the memo line you place early childhood education documentary or early education documentary. That's how it goes to that particular account.
Got it.
Okay.
It early goes education documentary.
Yeah, on the memo line, but you write the check out to Virginia Organizing. But people could give online too. So all the instructions are on that website, Virginia Organizing. I mean, America's Darkest Future, and that's America with the S.
And it's tax deductible, right?
100% tax deductible. So it's not part of it and all that stuff. Now we're not playing games with your money. You know, this is going straight to, and $31,000 to shoot a film that's national. Is not easy. That was streamlining it. Like that's me. Yeah. That's me staying at like family homes, like up and down the East Coast. That's not me sitting in a luxury hotel. Like okay, you know we eating you know caviar and all that stuff. Nah, man, I'm going home to my people's homes.
Bring in the prawns. I have to go to the lower class communities today.
Yeah, exactly. It's none of that. Like this is like I because this project some. Would cost like maybe $75,000-$80,000 or so, something like that. Yeah. And that's not what it's about for me, man. I'll sleep in a car if I had to. Like, I'll sleep in a car. I don't, you know, I don't care.
Ty Cooper, much love, much respect.
Thank you.
Making it happen for the benefit of all of us. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Keith Morris, Keith Morris and the Crooked Numbers, and you're listening to 94.7 Homegrown Radio.
58 minutes past the hour, and we're coming to the end of another episode of Homegrown, your show about local art, here on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We want to thank our guests today, Levi Duncan from Champion Brewing Company, Robbie Crystal and Jason Cooper, representing Four County Players about Once on This Island, and of course, our man Ty Cooper, talking about his documentary, America's Darkest Future. Check them all out. Give them some love if you can. Stay tuned. Coming after us
It's the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore, talking to Sean Tubbs from Charlottesville tomorrow, talking about some current events. That's what we got this week. Come back. Catch us next week. Be good to each other.
Listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.